This is Rocket Science. Your favorite Columbia podcast. This is Rocket Science. This is our first episode of the new 2023 fall season, and I'm your host, Justin Chang, back with my fellow co-host.
Hi, I'm Sonia. And the cycle of the season. It's the cycle of CSI podcast co-host. Must be getting new. So we have a new co-host. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. I'm Tina Lu.
Yay!
Hey,
you
want
to tell us about yourself?
Yeah, for sure. I am a senior studying biomedical engineering at Columbia. And usually you can find me playing badminton on campus or in their makerspace trying to 3D print something or laser cut something. Those are the two places that I basically live in.
Wonderful.
All right, so today, to introduce Tina, we're going to talk about the three-body problem. So, Tina, do you want to tell us about the three-body problem?
Yes, I am so excited to talk about this series. This is actually my favorite book, or favorite trilogy. So, the series is technically called Remembrance of Earth's Past. It's written by a Chinese author named Liu Cixin. But the series is usually just referred to by the name of the first book, which is the three-body problem. And three-body problem, generally speaking, is about the universe, it's about aliens, it's about science, and it's a really cool series and would highly recommend you read it if you haven't already. If you don't like reading, you can wait for the Netflix show to come out. But to avoid any spoilers, today I want to talk about the book, but in a way that won't introduce a lot of spoilers. But to begin, I want to echo back to actually a thing mentioned in the very first episode of this podcast series.
Wow. Listener.
Wow.
In the first episode, the host talked about the Fermi paradox. For those who are not familiar, it's just the idea that given the vastness of the universe and how many planets there are, it's statistically unlikely that humans are the only intelligent beings in the universe. But if that's unlikely, why is it the case that we haven't heard from aliens yet? So that's a paradox. And to begin, I'm just curious to hear what Sonia, Justin, you guys think about this.
I mean, I think we talked about this a few episodes ago, but there's a professor at Columbia named David Kipping, and his life's work is finding exoplanets or exomoons, and that's like basically places that would have extraterrestrial life. And his take on the Fermi problem is that it's actually very egotistical of us to say that, like, oh, there's no way we're special. Like, we think we're not special. And so we're like, oh, there's probably other people out there. And I think his argument is like, no, it's even if it seems statistically small, like the chances of there being extraterrestrial life, if you break it down to like how many planets can actually host like extraterrestrial life and the zones that need those conditions and like the amount of time after the existence of the Earth to when humans existed, like if you factor all of those things in, the probability goes way, way down. So that's my take.
Do you believe that?
So we're all alone?
Yeah.
I think as...
That's a deep question.
As a person on this planet, I'd like to believe that we're not. But as a student of physics, I have been convinced to believe that we might be.
Nice, yeah,
I see. Well, I've just very recently even heard about this three-body problem after you guys talked about it. So my understanding is that it's just like a problem when it comes to like the gravitation of planets, right?
Oh yeah, the Fermi paradox is irrelevant to the mathematical three-body problem.
Well, so from my limited reading, it seems as if, like this world that we live in, like outer space, isn't as stable as we like originally have believed. I don't know how true that is, but yeah, I've always had this perception of the universe as something that is so large that it is actually very stable. But after my brief reading, it seems as if things are a bit more shakier than it seems.
So do you believe in aliens?
I feel like there is maybe life, but I don't know about higher life, if that makes sense,
like
right?
Microbial.
Yeah, like that, I feel like I'd be more easily inclined to believe, but higher forms, I don't know.
Yeah,
that'd be scary.
Yeah, aren't scientists finding water on Mars? What's going on with that?
I think they're finding signs that there may have once been water, maybe. Like, I think
I did read that as well.
Yeah, there's, I could be wrong, so please don't take what I say to be the truth. But I think they found, like, they're trying to see if they can definitively find, like, clear signs that there wasn't water. But I don't know if they have yet found anything.
Yeah, didn't they find like a body of water that was like dehydrated, evaporated?
A body of dehydrated water?
Like, you know, it used to be there, you know?
It used to be water.
Yeah, or something.
Yeah, I mean, they found like signatures that suggest water on planets that aren't Mars. I don't remember what they found on Mars. They might have found like a well of dehydrated water.
Is that the scientific term?
Fascinating. Mm. Anyways, there have been many attempts at answering the Fermi paradox. One, like Sana mentioned, is just it is actually super unlikely for other forms of life to exist given the constraining conditions. And in the scale of the universe, you can also think about how long life has been alive for or will be alive for on Earth. And it's unlikely that maybe two higher life forms are existing at the same time. Okay, but in the series, one solution to the paradox is introduced. I'm not going to go into spoilers, but I will pose a thought experiment to the two of you. So in the series, there's a concept called cosmic sociology that is coined. And it's a new field of study and the study of sociology on a cosmic universe level. And in this theory, there are three axioms. First, suppose there are a vast number of civilizations distributed throughout the universe. So infinite number of civilizations. And these civilizations make up cosmic society. Cosmic sociology is a study of the super society. Two, suppose that survival is the primary need of a civilization. Three, suppose that civilizations continuously expand over time, but the total matter in the universe remains constant. Those are three axioms. Do those make sense to both of you?
So do civilizations know about one another?
They know that they exist, mm-hmm. but they don't necessarily know where they are.
Okay.
So they don't interact with each other?
That's actually the next part. I think the question is based on these axioms, will they interact with each other?
Well, so I actually had a question before. How advanced are these civilizations?
They are advanced, they are intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
But
can they
within
travel?
That intelligence, there's variation in how advanced. You can think about humans too. We started out in the Stone Age,
right?
And then we move on to the Iron Age, now we're in the Digital Age. So there's that type of variation.
Well, I guess what I'd be at, do you guys know about types of civilizations? No?
Like on a baseline level.
Like type one. So would we be able to travel between the planets in our galaxy? Are we as advanced as humans are today?
Depends on which civilization you are. Both types exist.
In this scenario?
Yes.
like I think is a good way to think about it, like snapshots of human evolution over time, and each civilization is like one snapshot of human like past and future.
Right. Yeah. I think that is. So any level of advancement.
I think they would interact at one point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
Because as civilizations grow and advance, I feel like species use resources at a faster rate than those resources can be naturally made, which would kind of force their hand for exploration and seeking out other maybe potential homes. And through this, they will run into each other, for lack of better terms. And so, and meet each other.
What type of interaction do you think that would be?
If humans serve as any foreshadowing, then I feel like it'd be violent.
Violent?
Yeah.
Oh. You're saying humans are violent? We've never done anything like that.
We've
been
so friendly.
Yeah,
we're right. So
great. We're the best.
We're so wonderful.
So, yeah, I feel like it'd be more hostile than friendly. That's just my honest opinion.
I see. That does make sense. Do you agree with that sentiment, Sonia?
I agree with hostility if something were to happen, but because I think another thing that I kind of like keeps floating in my head is the axiom where it says that all like the total amount of stuff has to be conserved.
Yes.
And so if there's, for example, like right now, there are the most humans that have ever existed on planet Earth. And so if you have a civilization that is rapidly expanding, has better, like, longer lifespans, et cetera, you have more people. And so naturally that would mean that another civilization would have a lot less people. And I guess this goes back to the argument with the Fermi paradox, where it says, if there is intelligent life out there, why haven't they found us? Because we're not at the level to find them, but if there are intelligent beings who are more intelligent than us, they could come to, like, there's a lot of people who theorize that aliens will probably come to us first if they are more advanced. And so, I don't know, I'm kind of grappling with the, will they ever interact? Because on one level, I do feel like they would want, like, obviously they're going to be influenced by one another just because they coexist in the same universe and the conditions that you mentioned. But I don't know, maybe like not traveling to a different civilization, but some kind of communication through like signals or something like that, I imagine happening as like interaction between civilizations.
Very fascinating, Ali. Love these thoughts. Okay, so let's break this question down more rigorously. Once again, we are scientists of cosmic sociology, PhDs in this field, and we want to understand how a super society works on a cosmic level. Before I dive into the next question, I want to throw out two assumptions on top of our axioms for you guys to keep in mind. The first one is suspicion chain. And the second one is technology explosion. So just took that away in the back of your mind as we analyze this more rigorously. So we posited that there are infinite number of civilizations out there. Let's just consider two civilizations right now, civilization A and B. Let's say A discovers B in this vast universe. Now A basically has two choices, right? A can do nothing, or it can initiate a form of contact in some way.
Okay, so now let's categorize civilizations into two types as well. There are hostile civilizations and friendly civilizations. So given this information, what would civilization A do?
Civilization A is the one that found B.
Yes.
I think just natural curiosity and, you know, technology advancement, A would probably initiate some kind of contact with B. I think that's just my gut feeling.
Like no matter whether B is hostile or friendly, you think A would always initiate contact?
I think so.
How would they know if they're not friendly, if they're friendly or hostile without contact?
Great question. Assuming we do know what happens.
So then there would be two paradigms, right? If we know, then that's...
No, it's a very simple, don't overthink this question yet. Okay, so let's say B is hostile.
There's so much room to overthink.
Actually, let's say A is hostile. So if like
A is
we are hostile, what would we do when we see B?
If A is hostile, then I think like 100% if they would initiate contact.
Yeah.
I guess if we're friendly, we would also.
Yeah.
Okay, what if B was hostile?
I think
just A wants to survive.
I feel like they'd still initiate contact.
Me too. And I have a reason for that.
Okay.
I have a reason for that. It's because if you're trying to survive and you know this civilization is hostile, but you're the one with the ability to reach them and get to their civilization, we could assume that they're more advanced than this civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they're hostile and they're purely thinking about survival, then it'd be prudent for them to take them out when they can.
That is great thinking. So I think you're a few steps ahead here, but let's break it down for step by step for our listeners. So we already established that, okay. So let's say hostile civilizations, they want to attack another civilization when they're discovered because they view them as a threat. Like this civilization could be a threat to my survival and my existence. Friendly civilizations will just say that they will only attack when they are threatened. They don't want to cause conflict, they're just happy being on their own and surviving. And all this leads into the suspicion chain that we previously mentioned. Like Justin asked, there is no way to actually know whether a civilization is hostile or friendly. So we can assume A is friendly, but A has no way of knowing if B is friendly or hostile, and the vice versa is also true. And the chain starts with if A knows that B thinks A is friendly. How does A know B knows A knows B thinks A is friendly and vice versa? It can keep going. And this is an endless cycle of suspicion where you just can't figure it out. And this is especially true on the cosmic level. On Earth, when there's limited space and distance is overcomable, the chain could probably only exist, 2 to 3 degrees and it will terminate because you can't communicate. On a universal level, there is no way to communicate because your speed of communication is limited by the speed of light and you're too far away to establish a stable chain of communication. Okay, so that's all of which is to say, we have no idea of knowing whether another civilization is hostile or friendly. Now, onto the point Justin raised, how it would be prudent to eliminate this other civilization. If we did the discovery, it's probably true that we are more technologically advanced. So first of all, did you agree with that?
I think as much as I don't want to agree, I think I do agree that if a civilization were to find another civilization, the end goal would be to eliminate them.
Wait, but if it's the case that I am more advanced and B is less advanced, why am I worried about B? I'm more advanced anyways.
think you could still learn from a civilization. And I think the fear is that we could maybe at some point become more advanced.
Yeah, because at one point the advanced civilization wasn't advanced.
Mm-hmm.
And they definitely understand that. In time, you can become advanced.
And the rate of discovery isn't going to be the same for every civilization.
Yes.
True. And remember the second assumption that I said?
Nothing is wasted?
No, it's a technology explosion. So that's exactly the concept that you guys are alluding to here. There is the persistent theory that whatever civilization will experience a technology explosion and suddenly become more advanced than we are. And then we would be at threat of being eliminated. And just looking at humans, I think that's pretty apparent just how much civilization and technology has grown in the past 2 centuries. It has been exponential growth. And that can be very threatening to potential other civilization out there. Okay, so we've established these theorems on how civilizations will interact. Let's go back. Civilization A sees civilization B. What choice is A left with?
He's probably gonna initiate contact, and I don't know how they would approach it. I don't know how they would approach contact, but I imagine that they're going to somehow attack civilization B.
Yeah, I agree with Sonia. I think at some point they would initiate contact and it'll probably get hostile. If there's one aggressor, then it'll be hostile.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. To put it even more bluntly, when A discovers B, there's actually only one optimal move, and that's to destroy civilization B.
Mm-hmm.
So
nice.
This theorem, the author gave it a name. The universe is a dark forest. It's the dark forest theorem.
Mm-hmm.
Every civilization you can think of as a hunter with a gun. They all pass quietly through this forest, and they must be extremely cautious to not be discovered by the other hunters. Because if you're discovered by another hunter, they don't care whether you're friend or foe, angel or demon, old or young. The only choice they have for their own survival is to kill it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who reveals their location in this forest will be destroyed.
How morbid.
Yeah, that's so dark.
It's the name Dark
Fair. Ah,
but does answer the Fermi paradox.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Let's hope we can stay hidden, everybody.
Don't be discovered.
Don't be discovered.
Don't be discovered.
And the lesson here today is to never leave your room.
Hey, there's like that old Japanese proverb that I just wrote about in my paper where the nail that sticks out gets hammered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess it applies cosmically as well. Don't stick out.
Wow.
I hope that if we find alien species that we can keep them as little pets.
Have you? This reminds me of the plot of Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah, I'm a little Stitch. Except Stitch was a voluntary pet.
Yeah, Stitch is my guy.
That was such an ancient part of my childhood.
Segway.
We should have added that into the movie thing that we did.
The
movie podcast episode. Lilo and Stitch should have been in
there. Lilo and Stitch. That's actually my favorite section.
Yeah.
No, we should do a part two.
We should definitely do a part two.
You should leave. I don't actually know how you leave comments, but you should leave a comment telling us what we should talk about.
Comment, subscribe. You know what to do.
Do we have any socials?
Hit the bell notification.
Yeah.
If someone wants to design us a new logo, then we can have a social.
Yeah, actually, anyone out there, hit me up. I don't know how. I'm not putting my information out there, but hit me up.
Every day you know
you're
gonna destroy
your location. Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
Exactly.
Just don't reveal your location.
Nice. So what is the show that's coming out? I think I heard that it was gonna come out in January of next year.
Yeah, soon.
Yeah, really soon.
I'm not sure what the timeline is, and I honestly don't know how much of the trilogy they plan to cover in one season. But it's interesting because so much content for Three Body came out in the last 2 years. Mm. So first there was an animated version of book two, made by this Chinese company, but consensus is it's not that good. Then this year there was a C drama that came out about book one. And
really?
I'm halfway through. I think it's pretty good. It's mostly original to the book, but they introduced some new characters and it's very interesting. They also have, strangely enough, a very environmental focus as well. Like environmental awareness and protection is also a prominent theme, which I think it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
In a Netflix show, not sure what's going on.
I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Gotta wait and see.
I think it's gonna be, I feel like Netflix is very nervous when it comes to, like, especially because this book seems very, like, theoretical and, like, a lot, it requires a lot of conceptualization.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
It touches on a lot of big ideas, and I think the way the author likes to write it just have a huge conflict with, like, these huge action scenes to resolve the conflict.
Okay.
So a lot of that is hard, I think, to represent in reality because there's a lot of action going on.
Right. It does make for a good show.
Yeah.
That would. And how much of, like, the gravitational problem of the three body problem is in this story, because it's the same name.
Well, right. So a context for listeners, if you don't know what the three-body problem, the math problem is, it's the idea that when you have three massive bodies, their gravitational interaction is actually unpredictable.
Incalculable.
Yeah.
Incalculable.
There are no mathematical models or simulations that we have that can predict their movements. And I don't think they tackle the actual mathematical ways people have tried to solve the problem. But it manifests in another form that I think is really interesting.
Ooh.
I guess just, like, thinking about it conceptually, part of the three-body problem is that it, like, goes into chaos theory, right? And so, like, I think the fact that you have multiple civilizations in the axioms that you presented, there's going to be some level of chaos in how they interact. And, like, even though at the end, if you are discovered, you're going to meet your end, there's still a level of, like, disorder within that universe. And so I think that, like, not having read the book, I think that is, like, how it kind of separates the body.
Yes, but no, the two concepts aren't connected like that directly.
Okay.
So our thought experiment today is actually the forefront of book two.
Okay.
And three body problem is book one.
Oh, I see. Three body problem is the name of book one.
Yes. And the second book is The Dark Forest. But the whole series is also referred to as Three Body.
Interesting. Cool. Well, is there anything else that you guys wanted to discuss?
I think that's a good stopping point. We've given a lot of good advice.
Yeah.
Hello.
You come here for rocket science, you get life advice.
That's what we operate.
But okay, well, thank you guys for stopping by and listening. We will be back again with another episode in 2 weeks.
Some amount of time.
Yes.
But thank you for giving us your time. It's been a pleasure. I'm Justin.
I'm Sonia.
I'm Tina.
And this is Rocket Science.